Broadcasting.
Good afternoon. I'm convening this meeting of the House Committee on Revenue. It's Tuesday, May 4th. Before we start our public hearings for the day, let's have a roll call.
Representative Levy.
Present by video.
Representative Marsh.
Marsh is here by video.
Representative Smith.
Representative Smith is present by video.
Representative Valderrama.
Valderrama present by video.
Vice Chair Pham.
Pham is present by video.
Vice Chair Reschke.
Reschke present by video.
Madam Chair Nathanson.
Nathanson present by video. Thank you. We have four public hearings today. And as of the deadline for signing up to testify, we have no witnesses signed up to testify. And I want to confirm that for the record. Manny, is that still correct?
Yes, that is still correct.
Okay, that's true for all four bills. So I will open public hearings on each bill. We'll have the bill presented by LRO. There will be time for committee questions and discussion, if any. And there will be no witnesses for the public hearings. I'm opening a public hearing on House Bill 2442, LRO.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Kyle Easton, Legislative Revenue Office. And House Bill 2442 is another of the one of the 11 tax credits that are up for their standard sunset review this legislative session. And in this case, the tax credit with the sunset being extended is called the Severe Disability Credit. In this case, the extension of the sunset that's drafted on the introduced version is a four-year extension through January 1st, 2026. And I just wanted to call your attention to that, as that may have been just a mistake in the requesting of the drafting of legislation, as all the other credits are being extended the 6 years, the standard 6 years. But again, so House Bill 2442 is extending the severe disability credit. And so what that is that's an existing credit on the books that's providing an additional personal exemption for taxpayers that qualify as severely disabled. And so if this is a joint file taxpayer, both the taxpayer and the spouse could potentially qualify for this additional personal exemption if they are both considered disabled. But what the personal exemption credit is, what the additional personal exemption credit being provided by the severe disability credit, is an Oregon credit. It's indexed to inflation, and in 2021, it'd be equal to $214. So every year, that amount will creep up a bit in line with inflation. And the credit is available, again, to taxpayers that meet that severe disability definition, but it's also means tested. So the taxpayers have to have adjusted gross income less than or equal to $100,000 in the tax year. And so just in terms of who's been using this credit, it's about 32,000 taxpayers per year on average. And the average credit amount is about $145. And again, while the maximum amount of the credit is in 2021, $214, this is a non-refundable credit. So it will offset a taxpayer's tax liability. But if the taxpayer lacks sufficient tax liability, they can only benefit from the credit to the point of tax liability they have. And that's why the average benefit has been about $145. In terms of total cost, it's about $5 million per year. And again, just drawing attention to that note on the sunset, the standard introduced version is just a four-year extension, but the standard one would be a six-year extension. So that may be something the committee would want to take a look at if the committee decides to extend this along with the others.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Easton or comments? Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Easton, do we know from it came from business and labor, I think, is where this tax credit came from. Did they discuss why it was only to 2026 and not till 2028?
Representative Reschke, no, and I think it just got missed, honestly. And in the revenue impact statement, we may have got a little ahead of ourselves and just gave it the standard revenue impact estimate that's contained in the tax credit report.
Okay. Madam Chair, just a follow-up comment then. I think we should, I'm sorry.
Please do. Yes.
Okay. That we should take a look at making sure this is the full 6 years, unless there's good reason not to. I mean, 32,000 people take advantage of it. It's not a whole lot of money per, but I'm sure for each one that's taking this tax credit, it's needed and necessary. So I wouldn't want to shortchange it if we can avoid it.
Thank you, Representative Reschke, for your comments. Mr. Easton, could you please take care of having an amendment drafted?
Yes, Madam Chair, we'll get that in the works.
Great. Any other questions or comments on House Bill 2442? Getting ready to close the public hearing. Mr. Easton, Mr. Alanak, anything else on this one? Okay, I'm closing the public hearing on House Bill 2442. I'm opening a public hearing on House Bill 2444.
Okay, Madam Chair, House Bill 2444 is similar to House Bill 2442. In this case, this is another of the 11 tax credits up for sunset extension. The language is for the 6-year extension in this case, but this is related to the tax credit for a child with a disability. And the credit itself functions pretty much the same as the credit that was just described in the previous bill, in that it's an additional personal exemption credit available to a taxpayer that has a child or perhaps children with a qualifying disability. So again, the amount of the additional credit in this case is indexed to inflation, so it would be $214 in 2021. In terms of the definition for a child with a disability, I did include that in the SMS background, as that is specified. And the child age in this case would be under the age of 21 or younger at the end of the tax year. As the previous credit, in line with the previous credit, this credit is means tested. So taxpayers would have to be have an AGI or adjusted gross income under 100,000 to qualify. And in this case, looking at past years, about 20,000 taxpayers have used this in a given year with an average benefit of about $200. And again, the total cost of this one is similar to the previous one in that it's about $5 million per year.
Thank you. Questions or comments on this bill? Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Easton, you said it's means tested at $100,000 or less. Is that for single filing or does that include joint filers as well?
Yes, Representative Reschke, that is for all filer types. So whether you're single or joint, that $100,000 is a hard cap.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions or comments? Nalaro, anything additional, or do you want to make a comment on why sometimes we see caps that are for single filers and sometimes for different caps for single and joint? Is there any special history around that we should be aware of?
Madam Chair, yes, you are correct that it can depend upon the tax policy. In this instance, I'm unaware of the discussion that happened. I can go and take a look at some of the past history of how that cap was decided upon rather than having a 100 or a 2,000. And I don't want to put Chris on the spot. He may remember from those discussions 6 years ago as well.
Yes, Madam Chair, I believe it was the Housing and Human Services Committee, and they did specifically look at this, and it was a deliberate policy decision as opposed to a mistake of some kind. And they looked at, I remember the committee looking at the distribution of claimants beforehand, and the ultimate choice was to just cap it at 100,000 for all filers.
That's very helpful. Thank you, Mr. Alanak. It's encouraging to know that there was discussion and it was a policy choice, not an inadvertent mistake or oversight. Thank you. Representative Marsh, did you have your hand up? Uh, Oh, can't hear you.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. I was just going to add to the conversation that I see that both of these disability tax credits were created in 1985. So that's probably why they're in particular as a parallel structure between them in terms of how they deal with income limits.
Thank you. Anything else on House Bill 2444 before I close the public hearing? Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Easton, do you know, you mentioned in the previous tax credit that it was, the benefit seemed like it was indexed to inflation. I'm just wondering if the caps on these are indexed to inflation, or they've just been a hard cap at 100,000 since when?
Yes, Representative Reschke, these are hard caps that are not indexed to inflation. And that is part of the reason the revenue impact statements going forward, more for House Bill 2442, we've really seen in many ways a leveling off of these usages. And even in future years, we could see a decrease in use going forward just because of that index slowly capturing more and more taxpayers as we move forward. The child with a disability is a little different in that it also reflects number of children and those that meet the definition of disability.
All right, well, thank you very much.
Anything else on 2444? Not seeing any other hands up, so I'm closing the public hearing on House Bill 2444. Opening a public hearing now on House Bill 2445.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Mazen Malik with Legislative Revenue Office, and the House Bill 2445 deals with an exemption from the marijuana tax for the medical marijuana use. This exemption started way back then with the legalization work in 2016. And this is assumed to be a sunset with the implicit 6-year sunset. So this bill basically puts an explicit sunset into the law going all the way to January 1st, 2028, puts it back on a 6-year explicit sunset cycle. I've also included in your packet the estimates that comes from the tax expenditure report and the page from that that shows that the governor is asking for an extended sunset for this tax exemption.
Thank you. Any committee discussion or questions? Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Malik, let's see here. In the revenue impact statement, there isn't a chart like there are in the other tax credits that outline what the cost of this is. I have another table, though, that gives me some numbers on it, that it's about $4.5 million in the next biennium and $6.3 million going forward. I want to confirm those numbers are correct or close, and then try to understand why the increase over time. Is it just more people getting medical marijuana cards and then buying marijuana and using this tax credit? I'm just kind of curious about why it's growing the way it is.
Representative Reschke, the estimates from the tax expenditure report goes at about 38 million biennium. Oh. And that is for the 19 and 21. However, for 21-23, it sunsets, the assumption that it sunsets mid-year down 22, which is in the middle of the biennium. So the revenue impact is cut down to 10 million. Assuming that the rest would be recovered through taxation. So that's why you have two different numbers for the different bienniums on that.
Okay. Just a follow-up, Madam Chair.
Yeah, please.
So my numbers were incorrect. I was reading from the wrong line. So I appreciate your correction on that, Mr. Malik. And okay, that helps explain a little bit for me. Thank you.
So this is an interesting point, though, that what we're seeing is the projected amount of tax that would not be collected, but assuming current law, and current law would have this disappear. So it's assuming we would start collecting taxes mid-biennium. Is that paraphrasing correct? Assuming we start collecting taxes.
That is correct, Madam Chair.
Representative Pham.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. I just wanted a clarification because I'm trying to read the staff measure summary. What year would we start collecting this tax because of the sunset, once it sunsets?
So, Representative Pham, the sunset, if it's to take effect, it would be December 31st, 2021 would be the last day if we the collection. So then we would start in January 1st, 2022, collecting back these taxes. And what that means is you would be recovering about 28 million of the tax that otherwise would be collected. And the impact for those 6 months in the biennium, remember the biennium starts July 1st of 2021. So you have to July 1st, 2021 until December 31st, 2021. Those are 6 months of exemption, continued exemption. And afterwards you start collecting back again.
Follow-up question, Madam Chair?
Sure.
Thank you so much, Mr. Malik. I was just confused because in the staff measure summary, it says that it eliminates the tax exemption on January 1st, 2028. Could you explain what the 2028 date is referring to?
So, Madam Chair, Representative Pham, so the bill, what it does, it tries to institute or put in statutes the new sunset date. So it assumes this bill would basically say you will extend, this bill is for extension of the tax exemption. So the tax exemption will continue and it will move into an explicit 6-year cycle instead of the implicit sunset. The explicit 6-year cycle, if we take it from January 1st, 2021 or 2022, sorry, 6 years from then, it you would go to January 1st, 2028. That would be the 6-year moving window where you would every 6 year come back and examine whether this policy is still a good policy and the amounts that would be spent accordingly for that policy. That's what the 2028 does.
I see.
So this is an extension bill. This is a bill to allow you to extend it for another 6 years.
I see. Thank you.
Mr. Malik, on a more general level, what can you or Mr. Allenack tell us? And I understand if you're going to want to punt to someone from another, from an executive branch agency, for example, but what can you tell us about the use of the medical marijuana registry identification program versus recreational? Because this was established before recreational marijuana was allowed. So what can you tell us about the use of this and what are the economics around why someone would use this program rather than just buying the marijuana through one of the new retail outlets? Is this really a different set of products they're purchasing, or What's the supply and demand like between the medical and the recreational marijuana?
So, Madam Chair, as you correctly stated, medical marijuana was in use and allowed prior to the legalization of commercial. And the medical dispensaries had an arrangement of how many plants each medical user would have and who plants for whom and that kind of issue. So when legalization came, it was a new opening for the for medical users to start buying from the commercial dispensaries. However, the medical users typically do not buy it for, your weekend recreational type of use, where you would have limited amounts. Medical users fall mostly in what's so-called the super users. And the super users need a lot bigger amounts, more concentrations, and more purification, if you will. So some of that, not only usable marijuana, which is the leaf and your typical grandpa kind of marijuana use, but it is more of the concentrates, the more purified, and they use large amounts of it. So in that essence, because the logic at that time is one, and the state does not want to tax medicine, just in the same way that general sales tax states, exempts medicine and food. This would be exempt because the amounts that otherwise would be taxed because of the medical users would significantly impact their expenditures and their budgets because of the amounts and the ability of who buys what and how much they pay in these taxations. So it's in a way allow medical users an exemption or an expenditure, if you will, for them to pay less for their marijuana than the commercial user would.
Thank you very much for the information. That's helpful. Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a comment for LRO. I see that on the revenue impact statement that it says further analysis required. So I assume that we're going to get an updated revenue impact statement so we can see how this plays out in future biennia.
Well, that's correct, Representative, and also I included the in all this, the estimates from the tax expenditure report, which would be primarily the ones that we, here you go.
I have that right here. It's on page 398, if you're following along.
Yes. Yeah, it's section 16001 yep. of that.
That's it. Thank you very much.
Any other questions or comments before I close the public hearing on 2445? Okay, I'm closing the public hearing on 2445 now. I'm opening a public hearing on the final bill on our agenda for today. Opening the public hearing on House Bill 2452.
Okay, Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2452 is one more of the 11 tax credits up for their standard sunset renewal. And this is a 6-year extension. In this case, the tax credit is for the Oregon Veterans Home Physicians. So again, this is an established tax credit. It was enacted back in 2007, and it's available to physicians who provide medical care to residents of one of two of Oregon's veterans homes. So the credit, what it does is it provides $1,000 to the taxpayer that is that physician in the veteran's home that provides residents a credit equal to $1,000 for every 8 residents in which care is provided by the physician. And the credit maxes out at $5,000. There are requirements of the physician not to miss more than 5% of scheduled visits, and there is a certification process through the veteran's home where the physician is certified, ensuring that they do provide that care and they're not missing those number of visits. The use of this credit is relatively small, or it is very small, about 15 taxpayers per year claiming this credit. The total cost of the credit has ranged in the recent history of about $10,000 to $30,000 per year. The average amount is about $1,800 per taxpayer. So again, about 15 taxpayers, about $1,800 a piece. And the use of this credit in terms of how it's used to offset tax liability, about 85% of this is used by the taxpayers, the physicians, to offset their tax liability. So it gives you some sense of the incentive or the offsetting cost that it provides to those physicians through the tax credit. But again, just summarizing, this is a 6-year extension of an existing credit. And it is relatively not very often. Very few taxpayers use it, and that is reflective in the revenue impact statement that you see in OLIS, that it's roughly about less than $100,000 is our expectation going forward.
Thank you. Representative Marsh.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. Kyle, I understand, of course, that we care about veterans, but is there any policy justification for particularly rewarding healthcare professionals who care for veterans as opposed to who care for people in long-term care or people in homes with disabled individuals or any other particularly vulnerable population?
Yeah, Representative Marsh, one thing I failed to mention before as well is Oregon does have a rural medical practitioner's tax credit, which is separate from this tax credit, that is also available to those practitioners, not just physicians, but practitioners that provide care in rural areas. This credit, it was enacted back in 2007, and the discussion at the time was really focused upon the Oregon Veterans Home. In this case, it was the Dalles. There's also another location in Lebanon as well. But the difficulty that the Veterans Home was having in really keeping a physician on staff or attracting physicians to come to the Veterans Home and provide that care. And part of the discussion that was brought up was just the extra costs potentially related to the physician to come and provide that care at the Veterans Home, especially in instances where, because there's just not sufficient, numbers to have one physician on staff all the time, you're going to usually be looking at a physician that has an perhaps private practice, and then also sharing their time in the veteran's home as well. So that was part of the discussion, was just reflective of those costs of sort of really trying to attract someone to maybe in some cases split their professional time between their private practice or their practice at a larger institution, and then coming out to the veteran's home as well to supply that care.
Chair Nathanson, may I ask a follow-up?
Sure, and then I have a short comment also that might help respond to your question.
Thank you. And how does the timing of this, you mentioned the rural health provider tax credit, was that implemented before, after, do we know, in terms of sequence of this tax credit?
Yeah, Representative Marsh, that one does predate this credit, and it was discussed in the originating legislation, the committees that discussed this credit, is there an opportunity for someone to pick up both of the credits? And there certainly could be. If you qualify for both, you could benefit from in providing the care in a rural area and then also this credit as well. So there is an opportunity if you're maximizing both those credits, because they're both max at $5,000, could receive up to $10,000 in credit. The discussion at the committee level back in 2007 was ensuring if a physician is splitting their time, perhaps that makes more policy sense than if you were attracting a physician that's solely at the veteran's home and is then receiving two credits when they're only practicing at the veteran's home. But from the discussions that happened at the committee level, just listening to those, the discussion was focused that they would expect that the physicians really to be splitting their time just because it's In terms of the numbers, there may not be a sufficient numbers or demand for a full-time physician at just at the veteran's home all the time.
Thank you.
Representative Marsh, in a conversation I had last week with someone from ODVA, one of the factors that was explained to me is that it's pretty costly for the physicians business model, if you will, to travel to the veteran's home to see one patient, let's say one or two, that the travel time there and back is time lost from seeing patients in the practice where they generally are. And this partially offsets the expense of that so that they would be still interested in serving patients at the veterans home. Otherwise, it made more sense for them to just stay put and see patients in their own practice. They would not have the lost time and lost revenue then. That was part of the explanation. Representative Reschke, I saw that you had your hand up.
Yes, Madam Chair. I was just kind of listening to the conversation with yourself and Representative Marsh and Mr. Easton, and just trying to understand these are physicians that don't necessarily get paid to visit the home, Oregon's veterans' homes in the Dalles and Lebanon, or are they paid as well by the veterans' home?
I'm not sure whether it's accurate to say they're paid by the home. I think there's a reimbursement rate by patient, and it would generally be Medicaid, which is in some cases less than the cost of actually delivering the service. Mr. Easton, is anything I said needing to be corrected or clarified?
No, Madam Chair, that's the same conversation I've heard as well as that as a description. Yes.
Okay.
All right. That helps me understand why the tax credit. And again, Mr. Easton asked. You said it's about $1,800 per taxpayer, and there's only 15 physicians that take advantage of this per year. Is that correct? Okay. So it's pretty small and not a great universe. Okay. Thank you very much.
I am interested in the question that Representative Marsh asked a few minutes ago, which would be, in a way, it was perhaps more of a rhetorical question, but what would the difference be, the need for this kind of a tax credit to provide some incentive to retain physicians serving these patients versus the need to make sure that we have physicians or other practitioners available to serve other types of patients, the frail, the elderly, and so forth, who are in other homes. I thought that was an interesting question, and to know what tax credits may be available other than the rural provider tax credit, because it could be about serving patients who are not in what qualifies as a rural area or as rural services. But this one is specifically targeted to services to veterans. So I want to thank Representative Marsh for asking that larger question. Any other questions or comments on House Bill 2452 before I close this public hearing? Mr. Alanak, any other observations before we're done with this bill?
No, Madam Chair. I do have a kind of a process question that's not specific to this bill.
Okay. I'm ready to close the public hearing unless I see a hand go up in the next few seconds. Okay, I'm closing the public hearing on House Bill 2452. That completes our public hearings for today. Mr. Alanak.
Madam Chair, and I think I said question, I just meant statement, just for a heads up.
Sure.
For the members. If you were to, the three bills that this gets back to some of the conversation last Thursday about the definition of a tax expenditure and this automatic implicit sunset versus explicit sunset. And today provides a good example. If you were to look at the three bills that Kyle covered, you can actually see where 2022 is being replaced by 2028. That's what we refer to as an explicit sunset. You can actually look in statute and say, oh, here's where it expires. For the bill that Mazin covered, as he explained, the language you would notice is very different. It actually creates an explicit sunset. This is one where we economists, stakeholders had looked at this, and it would be an implicit sunset. We couldn't point to any place in statute that said, here's where this expires. You had to know or interpret statute that this was a tax expenditure, and then connect that to 315.037, the definition of an automatic sunset, and kind of piece together the sunset. And then you can realize that, oh, well, yes, I believe it's a tax expenditure. That's my interpretation. And because it was created after 1/1/2014, it has an automatic sunset. It was created in the 2015 session. So then you can get to the 1/31/21 sunset date, which is a complicated way for stakeholders to piece together a sunset date. And that really embodies the whole debate or policy issue at your feet around these implicit sunsets. So just something to be aware of as House revenue continues on tax expenditures and as we move to JTAX, how the issue kind of connects. So the bills that you had today just provides a nice connection to that, a nice specific examples.
Great, thank you. I appreciate it. Committee members, any other comments before we close today's meeting? Okay, thank you all. See you at the next one. We're adjourned.